is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. I'm Buster Olney, producing back in Bristol is Troy Farquharson. Look, Troy, I get why you go to bed early, but man, you missed a really interesting game six last night. It was the type of game, I got to tell you, you know, I got back to the hotel, it was like 12:15 or something like that, and you just sit up in your room trying to go to sleep, but you can't because there's just so much adrenaline from all that stuff that happened in another great game six.
I fall asleep to the radio broadcast, and at like 3 a.m. I asked Alexa who won the game. It was Nationals 7-2. I was like, oh, okay, great, I'll go back to bed. It wasn't until a few hours later I was like, oh my gosh, what happened in this game?
It was absolutely entertaining, and baseball has a long history of great game sixes, and this was certainly worthy. Now, it started on Tuesday afternoon when Max Scherzer, who you remember on Sunday, he couldn't even lift his right arm because he had a neck problem. But as we talked about in the podcast this week, pitchers regard cortisone as a miracle drug, and it's something that helps them immediately. So when our broadcast group, Dan Schulman, Chris Singleton, myself, walked into the ballpark yesterday, out on left field, there's Max Scherzer playing catch. Right after that, he went into Dave Martinez's office, looked at him, gave him a thumbs up. Max Scherzer was going to pitch. Dave Martinez told us that right after that. And after he spoke with us, Dave Martinez went into the pregame press conference and was asked, will Scherzer pitch game seven?
Davey, if there's a game seven tomorrow, will Max Scherzer be your starter?
As of right now, yes. I think he talked to some of you guys already. He gave you a thumbs up, didn't he?
He said I'm good.
He's good. He felt good. We'll see what transpires between now and tonight. But he says he feels good. So, yeah, as of right now, he'll definitely start game seven.
So at that moment, we knew Max Scherzer was going to pitch again in this World Series.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
The game of the day was phenomenal. World Series game six, Nationals Astros from Houston. In the top of the first inning, Justin Verlander was on the mound trying to break that winless streak that he has in the World Series. But right away you could see his stuff was flat. This is someone who during the course of this game surpassed 4,000 pitches for the year, more than any other pitcher in baseball. And Anthony Rendon took advantage in the first.
Started Turner with the fastballs, but no fastballs yet to Rendon. And now a breaking ball grounded softly to the right side and into right center for a base hit. And Turner will come around to score as Rendon crosses up the defense and hits about a six-hopper into right center for an RBI single. And Washington has taken an early 1-0 lead.
So Washington took that 1-0 lead into the bottom of the first inning. Steven Strasburg on the mound for Washington. And right away, George Springer, who loves the World Series, got the Astros going. He hit a double. He scored to tie the game on a sacrifice fly. And then Alex Bregman came to the plate with two outs.
The 2-0. And a fastball hit high and deep to left field. Soto back can only turn and watch it go. Home run Alex Bregman, who took the bat all the way down to first base with him before he tried to hand it off to his coach, Don Kelly. Third home run of the World Series for Bregman, and the Astros have taken a 2-1 lead.
He carried his bat with him all the way to first base, and when he tried to hand it to Don Kelly, it actually fell into foul territory. Chris Singleton was watching Steven Strasburg and said that Strasburg was basically staring him down from second base all the way to home because that's something you never see. We talked about it in the top of the fourth.
You know, it's interesting. We get a look at a replay of the home run. So he hits the home run, and the bat is in his left hand, right? His follow-through hand down on the knob. And then he transfers it into his right hand, but up on the label, the other end, as if he's going to just drop it. But he doesn't. For whatever reason, he runs another 60 feet with the bat, rounds first, then tries to give it to Don Kelly, who's not expecting it. And the bat falls to the ground in fair territory, back of the bag.
Just to be clear, in the unwritten rules of baseball, that is a major violation.
Yes, that is not a misdemeanor. That's a felony.
Well, as big of a boom as that was, Alex Bregman's going to get somebody hurt on his team. That's just, you can't do that. You can't carry the bat with you that far down the first baseline, so much so that you're going to hand it off to the first base coach. I love Bregman. He's a great player, but that's disrespectful to Strasburg and everyone on the field. and expect there to be some fireworks in this game at some point.
When Bregman got back to the dugout, Jose Altuve talked to him probably about that. That's certainly what it looked like. Maybe other players talked to him about that. The next time that Bregman came to the plate, it appeared he apologized to Yan Gomes. For the most part, we thought everyone was going to move on. But in the top of the fifth inning, Adam Eaton came to the plate for the Nationals against Justin Verlander.
The 0-1 is swinging the ball, drilled deep down the right field line. It is gone. Adam Eaton crushes one down the right field line about 10 feet to the left of the pole, and that home run has tied the game.
Two batters later, Juan Soto came to the plate.
The 3-1 on the way, and Soto lifts a high fly ball, deep right field, and the Nationals have taken the lead, and Soto took his bat down to first. Soto took his bat down to first with him and dropped it there to get back at what Bregman did earlier tonight, and now he is slowing his trot around third as much as you can. Finally making his way to the plate, and as he touches home plate, the Washington Nationals have taken the lead. Wow!
Troy, it was like Alex Bregman dunked. It was like something from the NBA where he dunked in the face of the Nationals, and then he had Juan Soto come back and posterize all the Astros from Justin Verlander to Alex Bregman. It was wild.
I know. I absolutely loved seeing that. I was actually awake for this portion of the game, and I was going crazy. I was like, Juan Soto, this is what we need in baseball.
Meanwhile, Steven Strasburg was battling, and he was pitching through the fifth inning, and Max Scherzer in the sixth inning got up to start throwing in the bullpen. The top of the seventh inning, everything went crazy.
This is all kinds of fun. There's a pitch and a little weak ground ball to the third base side of the mound. Barehanded by Peacock. Throw to first. And it goes off the glove of Gurriel and down the right field line into foul territory. It looked like Turner and the ball in the glove all got there at the same time. And Turner has been called out for being inside the baseline.
Here comes
Dave
Davis.
Martinez is hollering out at the field. This is an enormous call here in this game. Dave Martinez is livid and on his way out to the plate to talk with Sam Holbrook. There was definitely a collision between Turner and Gurriel. It looked like Gurriel did reach into the baseline a little bit to get the throw, but I don't want to go too far in that direction until we see a replay. But the magnitude of this call is obvious right here. Turner hit a weak, like a swinging bunt up the third baseline. Peacock barehanded it. Turner flying down the line, and you cannot call Trey Turner out on that play.
No, you cannot.
You cannot call him out on that play.
Yeah, it was called interference. I don't think it was close to being interference because the angle of the throw, the contact was created by the throw that was offline from Brad Peacock. It wasn't Trey Turner that necessarily created that contact. In fact, as he crossed first base, his right foot was in foul territory. So it wasn't like he was standing in front of the first baseman when that ball hit him. Now, after that, it was put up on the scoreboard that the play was under review, and the umpires went to the headsets, but that created a lot of confusion because, in fact, that particular play is not subject to review because it's a judgment call. And then when the umpires finished talking with the replay center back in New York, Gary Cederstrom, the crew chief, gave an out sign, again, feeding to the impression that the play was under review. It never was under review. Well, when everything settled down, the guy with the lowest heart rate in baseball, Anthony Rendon, came to the plate.
So runner at first, two down. Gomes had to go back on the play, and now Rendon hits a high fly ball to deep left field, and it is gone! Hit it up into the seats in the Crawford boxes above the scoreboard. And the Nationals dugout has erupted. They don't get the call, but they get a homer a couple of batters later, and it is 5-2 Washington.
And there would be more fireworks after the top of the seventh inning. Dave Martinez came out. He was furious. He had to be restrained by one of his coaches. He was going after the umpires. A.J. Hinch, the Astros manager, looked like he was upset in his conversation with the umpires because he was trying to figure out what happened with the replay and that whole thing. This was the final call in the bottom of the ninth.
Doolittle sets, fires, and a ball popped up. Back of second base, Cabrera is there, calls for it, and makes the catch, and the Washington Nationals have forced Game 7 tomorrow night. In as wild a game as you will see, the Nationals beat the Astros 7-2, and we assume Greinke and Scherzer will be the starters, but we know for sure there's going to be a Game 7 tomorrow night, and it's going to be something.
The road team has won every single game in this World Series. Right after the game, I spoke with Trey Turner, who was very blunt in his assessments.
Trey, start with this. You guys are playing Game 7 of the World Series tomorrow. After the craziness of this game, what do you feel about your chances tomorrow?
Oh, we love them. Hopefully we can get our guy on the mound. I don't know the situation there, but we have faith in whoever's going to take the mound tomorrow, and we're going to compete our tail off and hopefully come out with a win.
Right, you were involved in that controversial play in the seventh inning. Take us through it from your perspective and how you felt when you were called out.
Yeah, you know, I think the batter's box is in fair territory, and so is first base. I felt like I ran a straight line from the batter's box to first base, and, for whatever reason, I guess maybe because of bad throw, I was called out. A lot of momentum taken away right there, but Tony just, keeps coming through with clutch hits, and so it was nice to put that behind us real quick and put those runs back up.
Camera showed you yelling at the umpire, Joe Torre. What were you telling him?
I feel like every year that happened to us against the Cubs, and they came back and said that they got the rule wrong or something else should have happened. And I said, there's your man over there. He's in charge of the umpires. So if you want to get this cleared up, we should go to him. And, I don't know all the protocol and whatnot, but I just want the game to be called correctly, whatever that is, and move on.
What'd you think about Alex Bregman taking the bat to first base and then Juan Soto doing the same?
Hey, if you're going to do it, you got to expect it back. So obviously a big home run for him, and even a bigger home run for us to get that lead back later in the game. So, hey, do your thing.
How about Steven Strasburg tonight?
Unbelievable. I mean, what a guy. I mean, I wish he would have finished it out. I know his pitch count was a little high, but just to see him battle all year long and just get better and better as postseason went on, and two runs against these guys is a big deal, especially going eight plus innings. So that was unbelievable.
Here's our interview with Nationals left fielder Juan Soto.
Juan, you're playing Game 7 of the World Series tomorrow. What do you think?
It's gonna be fun because it's gonna be loud. I mean, we came back again, playing really good baseball. Team, we're gonna be good.
All right. When Alex Bregman takes that bat to first base on that home run, what did you think about that?
It's pretty cool. I want to do it, too. That's what I think when I saw that. I get the opportunity and do the same thing.
So when did you make that decision you were going to do that if you hit the ball that far?
Yeah. I just say I got to make sure the ball is far enough, and then I do it.
What was it like on the bench during all that craziness in the seventh inning, the arguing with the umpire?
They're humans. They make errors, too. We just got to keep it going. If you see, then everything turns in our favor. Everything goes good. We just got to keep grinding.
What did you see in Steven Strasburg tonight?
The same Steven Strasburg I've been seeing since the first day. Come here, come fight. Don't matter if they do two runs in the first inning. He's going to keep doing the same thing. He's going to keep throwing that curveball, keep throwing the changeup. And all the speeches, it's going to be amazing.
Here's Dave Martinez, Nationals manager, on what he heard from the umpires.
The explanation was it was just a judgment call.
And have you seen a replay of it?
I've seen a lot of replays of it.
And what is your opinion of it after?
I don't want to make this about one play. I mean, it was a big play. I just don't want to make it about one play. The boys, obviously Anthony came up big and, hit a home run, and we were celebrating, cheering. The boys were happy, and that's what this is all about.
Dave Martinez is the first manager to be ejected from a World Series game since Bobby Cox in 1996. He was asked again about his reaction to the interference call.
In the heat of the moment, things get blown out of hand. I saw things differently, but I'll never criticize any umpires or anything. It's, they're a big part of the game. I'm just really proud of the boys and the way they came out and played today. I mean, that's all I want to say about that. We got another game tomorrow, and let's come back tomorrow and win again.
He talked about Max Scherzer warming up in the bullpen during the game.
We got him up knowing that, if the game is tied, or we were up a run, we might have to use him. He wanted to go down there and just throw and get loose. We scored some more runs, and I immediately shut him down. You know, I felt very comfortable with doing and Huddy and Strauss right there.
He was asked about Alex Bregman carrying his bat to first base and Soto's response.
We didn't like it. And the fact that Soto did it, you know, I'll be quite honest with you, I didn't like it when he did it as well. It's a conversation I'll have with Juan. That's not who we are. I mean, if he feels like he wants to carry the bat all the way to first base, then that's him. But I don't like when our guys do it. I don't like the celebrations outside the dugout. I've said that before. That's just not who we are.
Steven Strasburg spoke with Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter late last night about pushing the Nationals to Game 7.
Yeah, I mean, I went out there and did what I wanted to do. And, you know, when I say that, it really has nothing to do with results. You know, I wanted to go out there and give it everything I had, you know, for this team, for this organization, and just leave it all out there on the field. You know, that's the only thing I can do.
After the game, A.J. Hinch, the Astros manager, was still confused by the Trey Turner play.
Yeah, I don't really understand it yet. I think we're going to all get an explanation. From what I understand, Joe's going to come in here. It took a really long time for nothing to happen. I knew the rule that what he called an interference. I haven't spent a lot of time on the play. I knew they were very upset about it. It's not a reviewable call. It's not, you can't protest it. You can't really do anything. And yet they go to the headset. So sounds like that's what they wanted. And for whatever reason, they couldn't get a hold of people, but we should let MLB handle it. That's one of the many plays tonight that is, I'm as confused as everybody is because there was no reason to have the delay.
Joe Torre is the chief operating officer for baseball on-field stuff, and he was in a press conference after the game, and he explained the Trey Turner play in the seventh.
The ruling was that Trey Turner interfered with the first baseman trying to make a play. He did run to the fair side of those 45-foot line, but really the violation was when he kept Gurriel from being able to catch the ball. It's a judgment call on the umpire. Sam Holbrook made the call. It's the right call.
He was asked about how long the review was. It was about 4.5 minutes, and he didn't make any excuses for what happened.
It shouldn't have been that long. I don't know if it was the noise or whatever it was. I know we had a hard line in our box, and we had trouble reaching people because we tried to make some calls. We couldn't do it. It should never be that long. That's unfortunate, and certainly, you know, we have to take ownership of that. But it shouldn't have been that long.
Alex Bregman, the Astros third baseman, apologized for carrying his bat to first base.
I just let my emotions get the best of me. It's not how I was raised to play the game, and I just let my emotions get the best of me, and I'm sorry for doing that.
He apologized to his teammates in the clubhouse right after the game. Mark Teixeira gave his thoughts on the interference call.
Technically, the call was the right call, but I just don't think that the umpire should have made the call. You know, this happens 5 or 6 times a year for a first baseman. Half the time, they kind of swallow the whistle, don't make the call, let the play go on. The other half the time, technically speaking, Turner was running inside of the line, so it gave the umpire an opportunity to make the interference call.
This is the first postseason series in Major League Baseball, the NBA, or NHL history in which the road team has won the first 6 games. The road team has outscored the home team 43-12 through the first 6 games of the series. We'll be talking about that with Jessica Mendoza coming up. But before that, do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. The real question is, how easy would it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek proves there's a better way. Search sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. Why is SeatGeek better than the rest? It's a better process. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web, then it rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. And finally, SeatGeek displays them on an interactive seat map. SeatGeek breaks down the details. Green dots mean good deals. Red dots are overpriced. And every purchase is fully guaranteed so you can shop for tickets with confidence. A quick look at the App Store shows over 50,000 five-star reviews. I use SeatGeek all the time, and I'm going to go to a Titans-Panthers game this weekend in Charlotte. with tickets that I got on SeatGeek. It was easy as always. SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code BUSTER for $10 off on your first purchase. That's promo code BUSTER for $10 off on your first purchase.
The Mendoza Line with Sunday Night Baseball's Jessica Mendoza.
And Jess, wow, that game last night was insane. That's the kind of game, I got to tell you, you know, you do the post-game work and you go back to the hotel and you're staring at the walls in the hotel room wide awake because you have so much adrenaline. And I was thinking about you because eventually I did go back to sleep, but you had to get up like 3 hours later to do get up this morning.
Yeah, I was up at 5. And then, you know, you write everything, right? And I know now I have such an appreciation for writers because I like to give all of, because I know that everyone that I'm working with this morning didn't watch the game. And so I basically write everything that I feel like were the highlights, the things I want to get into, all the stuff I need them to look up, graphics, all, you know, so that's putting me up until 1-2 in the morning. And then, you know, I'm up to 5 walking to work and getting ready to go. So I'm a morning person. It's been the nights that, like, that's why I'm so excited about this game 6, because I'll tell you what, there's been a couple games this World Series where I'm like fighting sleep in the 6th, 7th innings. I've only gotten a few hours. This one, I mean, Buster, there were times I was jumping on my bed in my hotel room, like yelling at the TV. Like, I'm sure my neighbors at the hotel do not appreciate it. I'm like, come on, it's World Series game 6. You should be watching.
It was a nutty game. It, for the most part, well, put it this way. In the first 5 games of the World Series, there was one lead change. Last night we had 2, plus all the craziness. So that game distinguished itself from the rest of the World Series. And I've got a laundry list of stuff to get to, and we'll get into all of what happened last night. But let's start with this. I thought, you know, Dave Martinez, what an emotional night. Like, he goes absolutely nuts during the course of the game. You know, we're in the 7th inning stretch, and he looked down the field, and all of a sudden, I see Dave Martinez being restrained by one of his coaches, and he's going after the umpires, and he winds up getting ejected. The first manager to be ejected.
We need some Chip Hale in our life, by the way. I think everyone needs a Chip Hale in their life. Go ahead. The one who's restraining him.
Yeah, and he winds up, you know, being ejected. First manager in 23 years to be ejected from a World Series game. And then after the game, you get knuckleheads like me going in there and asking, you know, the right questions about how he felt in that moment and what did he think about the call. I thought Dave Martinez handled it perfectly because he's like, you know what? I don't want to get into any of that. I don't want to talk about that. And he said it respectfully. He said, I understand, but you know what? It's all about game 7 in so many words. And that's exactly what I thought he should have done in that moment, considering what the outcome was. There was no reason for him to relive all the details of what happened in the game.
Unless they lose. Like, I feel like, and not that you want to relive it anyway and you want to take the high road, but there was a moment there, and this is for the people who weren't watching the game live, but when you were watching it live, during the entire time the umpires had the headsets on, the showing Trey Turner in the dugout, just the emotions completely. I mean, honestly, watching the broadcast, they were bleeping out every other word that was coming out of that dugout because it was so much emotion. It felt like that was something we're going to be talking about this moment for years, because in that moment, it felt like the Nationals are going to lose this game, and this is why. It's going to be because of this. So I think Dave Martinez would have been a completely different person had Anthony Rendon not saved the day and come and hit that home run. I think then he would have been a lot more. But when you win the game, it's like, why go back and blow up that entire call?
100%. And that's what I thought was really smart by him, to not go back and relive that, because they won the game and they force a game 7. And game 7 will be started by Max Scherzer, who just on Sunday comes walking stiffly into the interview room in front of reporters. He when he was answering questions, he wasn't turning his neck. He was sitting in a swivel chair and turning the whole swivel chair to talk to reporters, and he just was so down. He gets a cortisone shot, which pitchers talk about as being, you know, such a, essentially a miracle drug. And then yesterday when we walk into the ballpark here in Houston, he's playing catch in the outfield and goes tells Dave Martinez, I'm ready to go. And you get the feeling that this could be something that could fire up the players. I asked Dave about that before the game yesterday about you know, whether or not the players might rally around this. And he mentioned that time when Max fouled the ball off into his own face, broke his nose, and the next day texted him a picture and said, I'm good to go. And he started that day with the black eyes. Dave said that got the players fired up. I gotta believe that tonight there'll be so much adrenaline with Max on the mound.
Well, especially because, I mean, from that press conference, Buster, and for those of us that know him, he was devastated. I mean, devastated. Yep. On Sunday, that he could not help his team. And I felt like it worked in the reverse. Like, he could not hide the emotion of how much he felt like he was letting his team down. And because of that, and not because that's the sole reason they lost by any means at all, but I felt like the team reacted to his devastation. And not just him not pitching, but just the overall vibe that he was giving of, like, I feel awful that I can't pitch in the game that I'm supposed to. I think it works in the reverse for game seven because he has fought, battled, done everything he can, the cortisone shot. I think my only concern with Scherzer tonight is we've seen in his starts in this postseason him go 110 plus pitches. How much length can he give this team? Now, the good thing is, you know, Daniel Hudson, Sean Doolittle, you know, those two pitchers, you can use anybody pretty much out of the bullpen. There is more options for Davey Martinez out of the bullpen. But what we've seen is they need length from these starters. And how much length can Scherzer bring when he has, you know, that injury that he had just a few days ago?
Yeah, Anibal Sanchez will be available. Patrick Corbin will be available. And to your point, we saw last night, Justin Verlander's stuff was just flat from the get-go. The guy has thrown more pitches than anybody in baseball this year, over 4,000. He just didn't have it. And I think it was because he was tired at the end of a long year. And you're right, that's a question about Max tonight. On the other side, we're going to see Zach Greinke, who's also looked tired in this postseason. And I would assume that he's going to be followed by Gerrit Cole. I talked to Gerrit before Game 6 and asked him about how his possible availability with Game 7 was something he was handling.
Because of the flight on the off day, last turn, I had a similar situation where normally I would pin on day two, but since we were flying, I decided to get settled in DC and throw my pin on day three, which for this week sets up pretty much the same exact way. And I felt really good last week on day three. So I'm just taking the same routine I did last week to prepare for the bullpen as I'm doing this week to prepare for possibly having to pitch on game seven.
Jess, I think he's going to wind up pitching like innings 4 through 6 tonight. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is something that you definitely see. And I think just for the morale of the Nats, I mean, to be able to get, you know, to Zach Greinke, you know, the point that they want to be able to do, they're going to have to do it early. And once they do that, knowing what is looming in the bullpen, and that's the one thing opposite of the Nationals is the Astros have so many guys that they can go to. And Gerrit Cole, who has been the ultimate throw down the hammer, you know, for this team. The one point I have to make with Gerrit Cole, and I know we've seen it so much, but the last time he has pitched in relief, you go back to his freshman year at UCLA. I went and looked at this against the Anteaters. He gave up a winning run. I mean, this is like, I know it's like tongue in cheek. Like, it's been how long since he was a little froshy with the Bruins, but this is something that I do think fans that now we've seen it time and time again from Randy Johnson to Madison Bumgarner, these star pitchers come out of the bullpen. It's not as easy as it looks, folks. He's talking about it being similar to a bullpen game. He's never done it, really. He's never done it as a professional. He's never done it with the Astros. This is something that I think you definitely look for, especially early on. If he's coming in mid-inning, what is he doing? Where's his heart rate? Because it's definitely different than coming in just as a starter.
All right, let's dig into Game 6 last night. We'll start with this. Golf clap for Steven Strasburg. You know, watching that last night, Jess, reminded me of how I felt during the 2014 postseason watching Madison Bumgarner, where he just seemed so in control, where even when there was runners on base, you know, he's pitching backwards, he's coming back in counts by throwing off speed pitches. He was just absolutely composed. And in the end, despite the fact that Max Scherzer got up at one point in the sixth inning, there's Steven Strasburg still out on the mound in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
What a performance.
The fifth inning.
You know, 5-0. Yeah.
The fifth
amazing.
Inning to me against Jose Altuve. And I remember in the moment, I sent this note to our producer in the moment. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen in this game, but to me, this is the series. This isn't even the game. Like, that fifth inning at bat to Jose Altuve, to me, was the series. Why? I mean, you have a pitcher or a hitter up to bat, similar to the Anthony Rendon in the first inning, where all you really got to do is put the ball in play. Take one of those breaking balls, find a hole, get to the grass, to be able to score some runs and respond. And you felt like Altuve, of all the guys in that order, that's what he does. I mean, that guy can hit anything. And what Steven Strasburg, you look at three pitches. He started him with the changeup, came back with the curveball. Then the third pitch, curveball that he bounced right in the same location that he just pitched a curveball for the strike. It looked like the same path, but now it bounces once. And Jose Altuve, he feels like he can at least make contact, do something, and he doesn't. I felt like that epitomized how good Steven Strasburg has been this postseason. And Buster, he does not get the love he deserves. When we give the attention to the Gerrit Coles, Justin Verlanders, and even Max Scherzers, I feel like Strasburg's been fourth on that list. And last night he proved to me, not only is he number one, but dude is opting out and he's getting paid.
Clayton Kershaw has postseason ghosts. He has not been able to fully conquer them. Justin Verlander now has some World Series ghosts that are going to be brought up time and time and time again. Steven Strasburg has put that whole conversation from years past to bed with what he's done in this postseason. It's been remarkable. All right, last night Alex Bregman hits a home run, and I got to tell you, I've covered the Astros the last two rounds, and it feels like with each home run, he's taken a little bit longer to get around the bases. It's almost like he's a performer trying to do something a little different. And what was different last night was he carries his bat all the way to first. And Jessa, I was watching him as he's going up the line, and I'm wondering, okay, when's he going to drop the bat? When's he going to drop the bat? When is he going to drop the bat? And he tries to hand the bat to Don Kelly, the first base coach, and it tumbles into fair territory.
And
Chris Singleton is watching Steven Strasburg, and he told us afterwards, Strasburg was staring down Bregman from picked him up somewhere between first and second base and then all the way home. And it reminded me of last year when he sent out that Instagram post about Nathan Eovaldi and video of Nathan Eovaldi giving up three homers to the Astros earlier in 2018. Why poke the bear? It made me shudder. And then, of course, later in the game, Juan Soto hits a monster home run, and then he does the same thing. And after the game, I asked Trey Turner about it, and I think what he said to me reflected the views of a lot of players on the team, like, you know what? You're going to do it. It's going to come back at you. That absolutely motivated the Nationals in that moment when he did that. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I also, I don't know if you got the memo, but it was bring your bat to first day. That was kind of the theme. Like, everyone was kind of like, I mean, that's just what it felt like. It was, first base coach and then Tim Bogar, who actually did catch the bat on the hand, the awkward handoff that happens. What I loved in all of it, I mean, Bregman's who he is. I will never change that. I loved it. I guess in the moment, I was more indifferent because I was more focused on the game. It was early, the first inning. When Juan Soto did it, first of all, I'm like, he thought about that. And then after the game, I don't know if you heard him, but he's like, I just thought it was cool, so I wanted to do it too. Like, that to me is just so pure, so raw. Instead of it being like what a lot of people thought initially was him kind of being like, oh yeah, you do it, I'm going to do it back, almost like a retaliatory thing. And instead it was like, no, like, I think it was cool. Like, I want to do it too. And I just loved it. I know the whole let the kids play, all of that. Bregman is the guy. I mean, shoot, that guy's going to do cartwheels going from first to second next time. I mean, he's someone that is definitely like, look at me, I'm ridiculously good, and I'm going to show you. That's his personality. Juan Soto, I mean, you just don't know what you're going to get, but I loved all of it.
I did the interview with Soto, and I really believe that he was hiding back what he really felt. I think that he was looking for an opportunity to retaliate. You know, I said to Troy earlier in the podcast, that reminded me of an NBA game where one guy, dunks in the face of a player on one team, and then the other guy on the other team comes right back and dunks right in his face. Dave Martinez said after the game that he doesn't like it. Tim Bogar, from his physical reactions, you could tell he wasn't wild about it because he kind of threw the bat away. But I think the other players loved it. I think the other Nationals absolutely appreciated what he was trying to
do. Absolutely.
You know, it was in the competition.
And it worked.
Exactly. All right, let's get to the interference call last night. Look, it turned into an absolute crap show as it played out. My feeling is that, and I know that Joe Torre went in the interview room after the game and he talked about, well, you know, it was the right call. Mark Teixeira, Tim Kirkchin have said, well, it was the right call. I don't think it was the right call, Jess, because when you see the play finish, Trey Turner's right foot is in foul territory. He hits the middle of the bag. The contact between him and Yuli Gurriel was not created by his path. It was created by the fact that Brad Peacock's throw was offline. And you never see that call made by umpires on a unless it's on a chopper hit in front of the mound, in front of home plate, and the catcher makes a throw, or the pitcher rushes in and throws to first base. We see contact all the time on between the first baseman and the base runner on throws from shortstop or third base or second base. They never call interference on those calls, even when the, you know, the glove is knocked away, even if the base runner may not have gone up the prescribed line, because the contact wasn't created by what the base runner did.
No, I mean, to me, the rule is ridiculous. And I start there because what was sent back to me multiple times reaching out to different umpires that are within MLB was he's technically supposed to be in that lane that's in foul territory, both feet, Buster. So in my mind, I'm like, how do you do that then and hit first base? That's, you realize that that's impossible to be able to do that and route yourself to where you need to get to the middle of the bag, which, oh, by the way, is outside those lines and in fair territory. So the whole rule itself is just left for this vague idea. And realistically, the question is this. If Brad Peacock throws the ball where he's supposed to the glove of Yuli Gurriel, do they call Trey Turner out? No, like never would you ever think of calling a runner out in that situation unless the throw. And that's my whole thing. If you're going to make something a judgment call, judge it based on what interference is. And that is, did Trey Turner, to your point, interfere with that ball being able to get to Yuli Gurriel the way it was supposed to? No. What happened was Brad Peacock threw it up the line and it ended up hitting him. And that ultimately is an error. It was everything. And I love Trey Turner afterwards. He's like, what do you want me to do? He's like, I'm running as fast as I can to first base. Like, do you want him to actually try to, like, reroute himself to be able to really ultimately get to where he needs to be at the middle of the bag? I'm up in arms about it. But thank goodness, Buster, my biggest thing, thank goodness for Anthony Rendon. Because in that moment, it felt like this is it, right? This is going to be the controversy. And now the Astros are going to win the World Series with this play looming overhead. It's the wrong call. It's the wrong rule. All of this stuff. I was so grateful knowing that this is what we do the next day, have to talk about it. It didn't matter. And that is the most important thing. Thank you, Anthony Rendon. Thank you for making it a game seven, but ultimately for not making that play the reason why the Astros win a World Series.
And it's Trey Turner's a right-handed hitter. That path, you know, constantly takes him into that spot. And you're right. Is he going to do like this, 30-degree angle to cut over to get inside that box? No one does that. You never see right-handed hitters do that. And he was just busting it out of the line. And I agree with you about Rendon. Look, I don't mean this literally, but you wouldn't have been surprised if you saw the umpires like bowing at a picture of Rendon after the game. We are not worthy. We are not worthy. Thank you for saving us. Joe Torre in there with him. Thank you for saving us from this controversy, which that home run certainly did. Because then everyone from Dave Martinez to us can move on and we can just talk about rule adjustments. And I do think, Jess, that there should be at least some conversation in baseball about having a double bag. If you actually think you want to keep part of that rule on the base, then put the double bags at first base. What do you think?
I played with one. I played my entire international career with a double bag. And yes, I mean, I can't tell you how many first basemen I blew up when the bag wasn't there in college, even when I was younger, and not on purpose, just because you're trying to fight for basically a couple feet of what is rightfully both of yours. And so when you talk about path, you talk about all of that, you put the orange bag, that's what we had. We had the white bag and fair, orange bag and foul, and I knew that orange bag is my path. That's what I, because that's all you're doing, point A to point B. Your only goal is to get there as fast as you possibly can, and whatever route gets you there, you're not thinking about, okay, if I go 3 feet to the left, and if you do, that's when you're out. That's when it's clearly what the rule is for. But if I'm just trying to get myself safe, like Trey Turner, then I believe that's where the rule needs to note that.
Yeah, I made this comparison with you before we started taping. To me, making that call would be like calling a foul in the NBA when a fingernail brushes the, you know, the forearm of the shooter.
He was touched.
Okay, technically. Yeah, exactly. I mean, technically, maybe it's right, but it was a terrible call, in my opinion. I know Chris Singleton, Dan Shulman felt the same way in the booth. All right, Jess, thanks for doing this. What a
game
crazy game.
Get seven. Today. Game seven. Who's sleeping? Are you kidding me? I'll sleep when it's over, right? I got 4 months. Yes. I got till spring. Yes. We're good.
Troy's sleeping. That's who sleeps.
No, I will
here.
Not be. I guarantee it, Buster.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jess. Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred was on Baseball Tonight on Tuesday, and he was asked about Major League Baseball moving forward with an automated strike zone.
We are experimenting aggressively with the automated strike zone. We used it in the Atlantic League this year. Nice partnership with that group. We used it in the Arizona Fall League where some of our best prospects play this fall. We're going to use it in minor league baseball next year. We want to make sure it's as good as it can possibly be. But I do think it's where the game's headed over the long haul.
And he was asked about how long it would be before the strike zone became part of Major League Baseball, the automated strike zone.
One of the big limitations right now is we are doing a technology overhaul that we think between this year and next year will materially improve the system. So we're at least a year away.
And that's your own group, right? That's
right. Yes.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk?
This is Hembo Knows.
Hembo, of course, is Paul Imbakides, who is a honcho on the show Get Up. He tells us he's the head honcho. And this morning, Hembo, in getting ready for the show, you sent this note, these words, "I'll be prepared to react to yesterday's game." And we were fine up to that point. "And predict a Game 7 winner." Really? You're going to be the one person who can predict anything that's happened in this series, because as I've been talking about on radio, conventional wisdom is 1 for 6. And if you want to step out on a limb and try to predict what's going to happen in this game, go ahead. Just go ahead, Hembo. Tell me what's going to happen.
That's totally fair, Buster. I'll drink my medicine. Although I will say this. A week ago, we had the same conversation. I picked the Nationals to win the series in 7 games, and there's been no reason for me to believe that anything else will happen tonight because, well, they're not playing at home.
Right. Like, it's all played out the way that you expected it to.
Oh, yeah.
You can't play that card.
Six for six on the road, just as I predicted.
Oh, my goodness. A couple of quick points from yesterday. One, I just told Jess that call last night made on the Trey Turner play reminded me of, like, in the NBA, if someone said, "Well, it was a foul because he brushed him with his fingernail as he was shooting the ball. Give me a break. It was a bad call. You never see that play called that way, ever. You know, you only see that play called on throws from catchers in front of home plate or maybe the pitcher coming in close to home plate, not from that angle. You never see that play called. And as Trey Turner passed first base, his right foot was in foul territory. Where do you want him to go?
It was completely outrageous. And it was even more outrageous when you heard Joe Torre back the umpire after the game and, you know, up there waving the rule book like it was the King James Version of the Bible. Like, I was so flummoxed by this. Like you said, this is never called. It is most certainly never enforced. And to choose Game 6 of the World Series as the time in which to do it was very bizarre. It goes without saying that if the throw was good, this is obviously not an issue. And also, I can't tell you how many times you see this like they say in football, you can call holding on every single play. Anytime a batter hits a ground ball in the infield, they always start their path from along the inside because that's just where their momentum is. Chase Utley, I recall, used to do this a lot more egregiously where he'd, you know, tear off and then finally, you know, shift back into the baseline at the very last second. A lot of left-handed hitters do that when they're out on their front foot. This was just, like, this happened 50 times in the game yesterday. The fact that this became a thing is just so baseball. Like, all I want to do is talk about an awesome World Series with a bunch of superstars. Game 5, it was all about the stupidest strike zone. And Game 6, it's all about this. Just give me a break, all right? I'm over it.
And I also mentioned to Jess that I thought what Dave Martinez did after the game was so smart and so right. When reporters were rightly asking him questions about what happened, he just kept spinning it forward. You know what? I don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to rip anybody. The Nationals are in game seven, and that's a great thing. I thought that was exactly the right thing to do from his perspective.
It doesn't do him any good to speak otherwise. He got his pound of flesh during the game, and I think he sort of reacted.
Yes.
He sort of reacted the way that a lot of us would have in the same circumstance, and obviously it gave him the chance to be, you know, the first manager to be ejected in more than 20 years in a World Series game, which was sort of a fun anecdote. But yes, you're exactly right. Everything now for the Nationals, and well, for both of these clubs for that matter, is geared up and shifted towards Game 7 of the series, and it doesn't do him or anyone else any good for that to be a lingering storyline. I totally agree.
What's at stake for Max Scherzer tonight?
Well, it's fitting that Max Scherzer is on the mound tonight because he has an opportunity to make a bit of unique history, Buster. Scherzer is in line to become the first pitcher and the second non-Yankee to win the World Series as the league's highest paid player. It's something that six different Yankees players have done a total of 13 times. Tris Speaker also did it as a member of the 1920 Indians. Scherzer took home $42 million this season, and he'll have the opportunity to earn every penny of that contract tonight.
I got to tell you, when we get reached this stage of the postseason, I want to go home. Like, I miss my 15-year-old. can't wait to see him. But I was excited for Game 7, largely because I didn't want Max Scherzer to go into the offseason with that Game 5 scratch riding on his shoulders, because I know how much he cares and how much that would have gnawed at him. So it's so cool he's going to get the ball.
Yes,
tonight.
It sort of reminds me of the NBA Finals this year where Kawhi Leonard went crazy, but we didn't have the chance to see him go against Kevin Durant for the full series. It sort of reminds me of that. We were cheapened out in that series. We're getting our full pound of flesh in this series. He deserves to start tonight. I'm really glad we're going to have a chance to watch it.
100%. And even if he doesn't pitch well, he took the ball.
He got a
which
shot.
Would be really important for him, and he won't have to answer questions about getting that scratch in Game 5 for the rest of his life. Nationals are one win away from extinguishing a juggernaut, you write.
Yes, the Nationals are one win away from that, Buster, while completing the most difficult path to a World Series any team has ever taken. At least that's what the numbers say. First, the Astros were the best hitting team and the best pitching team in baseball this season, as measured by OPS plus and ERA plus. The last team to pull that off and win the World Series was the 1948 Indians. That's how good this Astros team is, to quote our good friend Tim Kirchin. Secondly, the Nationals will become the first team to beat multiple teams in a single postseason that won 105 games in the regular season, of course, having already beaten the Dodgers. When accounting for the Cardinals as well, their LDS, LCS, and World Series opponents combined for 304 regular season wins. That would be the toughest road for any World Series champion in the wild card era.
All right, Hembo. Well, have fun watching the game tonight. It'll be a blast.
Same to you, boys.
Bleacher Tweets.
Okay, Buster. Really good Bleacher Tweets here. The first one from Nathan at GNilly97. Buster, do you think Alex Bregman's arrogance with the bat came back to bite him by motivating Soto and the Nats? And is Bregman's swagger sometimes a bad thing?
It has been the last two postseasons. Remember last year when he tweeted out that Instagram thing about Nathan Eovaldi giving up home runs to the Astros earlier in the season, and then Eovaldi stuck it to the Astros. And then he had this situation, which clearly motivated Soto and the Nationals.
David, at BaseballFan1918, is this year's Game 6 the craziest World Series game you have ever seen? If not, what game is? I would include you, Troy, but I'm certain you went to sleep by the third inning. False. Fifth inning.
No, it's not the craziest one. Look, Game 6 in 1975, I was 11 years old. That was absolutely nuts. And I can go back and recount like 15 different plays from that game because of the back and forth. Game 6, 1986, the Bill Buckner game. That was wild in how the Mets came back in the extra innings to win that game. 2001 World Series, the wide swings. And Game 6 in 2011. So this was a great game, not the craziest Game 6 I've ever seen.
Looking ahead to Game 7, Sterling at StirRide73 wants to know, hey, Buster and Troy, does Washington have the pitching advantage tonight with Scherzer, Corbin, and Sanchez available for Game 7? And how many innings do you think Gerrit Cole will be available for?
I think Gerrit Cole could pitch 2 to 3 innings. And if you're asking me to pick an advantage on either side, I will just tell you conventional wisdom is 1 for 6. Like, what we thought was going to happen didn't happen in 5 of the 6 games. So I'm not even going to try to predict it. I do think that you're dealing with a lot of tired starting pitchers who are going to be throwing in this game.
Speaking of Gerrit Cole, Noah at the 2 Fresh. Hey, Buster and Troy, how can the Angels sign a big paycheck to Garrett Cole this offseason while they're still robbing Disneyland to pay for Mike Trout?
And look, they still have a couple of years of Albert Pujols. I know you had a note here, Troy, about Shohei Ohtani. He's not making any money, so that one's not a big one. They do have 2 years of Albert Pujols. They have plenty of money. Look, they can certainly afford Garrett Cole, and again, that's where everybody in baseball thinks he's going to wind up.
Final one this morning is going to come from Gnome at Gnome89. Will Justin Verlander's continued struggles in the World Series affect his Hall of Fame case in any way?
Absolutely not. There's a chance he's going to finish his career with 300 wins. He's got like 225 in the regular season. The multiple Cy Young Awards, the MVP, he should be unanimous selection for the Hall of Fame.
I agree. Thank you for the Bleacher Tweets this morning. Keep them coming every day, especially tomorrow after Game 7. Use the hashtag Bleacher Tweets.
That's it for today. My thanks to Hembo, to Jessica Mendoza, to Troy Farkas. Man, Troy, you better stay up and watch this one tonight.
I'm staying up. I am taking a pregame nap. I'm getting some coffee. I have to do it. I'm staying up for the whole game. You have my word.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, if you're old like me, then maybe you have an excuse not to stay up, right? But you're not. You're young, so that's a good call by you. Enjoy the game, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.